Okay, the next topic I want to discuss, which we really did not discuss much about, is the position of the establishment in the land of Israel, in Eretz Yisrael, during the Gaonic period. We know that the Byzantine time period, until the Arab conquest, until the year 640, was very difficult for the Jews, the remaining Jews in the land of Eretz Yisrael. After the fall of the Nisius, those 200 years, the Byzantine rule in Israel, it was very difficult, a lot of decrees. It became even worse during the time of Emperor Justinian. During the Justinian time period, it was almost institutionalized, the decrees against the Jews. Up until that point, you know, whichever bishop controlled the ear of the emperor, so they passed a few laws and they made it a little bit more difficult. But the time of Justinian, he actually went into the kishkas of the Jewish people living in the land of Israel. He was careful. He was, you know, he made sure that you could not read from the Torah in shul. You couldn't say Shema during davening in shul. You couldn't translate the Torah only into Greek and no other perushim and other midrashim. You used to have always a meturgeman and then have shiurim, and all that was stopped during his time period. Basically, all crazy things that Jews could not celebrate Pesach until the Christians celebrated Easter. That all these institutionalized things, it was very, very difficult. And obviously, the result is that the Jewish population and the spiritual life really dwindled. Didn't go out completely, but it dwindled in the land of Israel. Now, even though it dwindled in the land of Israel, we do find, you know, there was a yeshiva in Tveria. We know Marzutra in the year, what is it, the year 500, 520, 530, went up, made aliyah from Bavel. He had to run away from Bavel, and he became, you know, the head of the Rosh Perek, the head of the Masifta in Tveria for the next seven generations. There was a yeshiva, clearly, but it wasn't on the level of the Gaonim, wasn't on the level of the Rabbanus of Roy. It was nothing like the Torah which was done in Bavel. One thing we do find, and we find that a lot, is till today, they keep on finding more and more shuls from that time period. And that's amazing. Wherever you go in Israel, they find another shul, whether it's in Kfar Nachum, which is Kfar Nachum, right? Kfar Nachum. They find this huge shul, by the way. They found the shul in Kfar Nachum, which was with mosaics, 75 feet long and 60 feet wide. That's where the shul was. Big columns, and they had two benches on either side, two levels can sit just on the outer perimeter, 220 people, and they would put people in the middle on mats, and they had an omid where the chazan would daven from. But the shuls were beautiful, so depending, of course, on where they were. Kfar Nachum was underneath the Jordan River, so they were fishermen and they were wealthy. And they say, based on the architecture, it was like a white, made out of white limestone, while all other neighborhood homes were made out of dark stone, and this was white limestone. Obviously, they invested money into it. Kfar Nachum was a shul, Beit Sha'arim, Beit Sha'an, you have all these shuls. We go around Israel, you find all these shuls from the 500s, 600s, 700s, some are a little bit earlier, the 400s. That's the time period when, as far as we know, nothing is really going on in Eretz Yisrael. We don't have any, it's after the Talmud Yerushalmi, it's after the Amoraim. So where does the spirituality grow and flourish? It wasn't so much the yeshivas, but shuls they had. And that gives rise to the Paitanim. The Paitanim was a uniquely Eretz Yisrael type of development. The Paitanim were the people that were daven for the Amid, and based on the situation that they found themselves in, they would add piyutim. They would add things to davening, which was their personal feelings, the way they felt, whether they were suppressed, or they were, you know, because of a yontif, and it was also to answer up the time frame that they found themselves in. They weren't allowed to learn Torah, and they weren't allowed to read from the Torah, or they weren't maybe yes read from the Torah, but they definitely couldn't have shiurim and midrashim and halacha. So they said, you know what? Let's put it into our davening. So they instituted where the Chazanim got up and they would make, obviously there was done Beruach HaKadosh, and there were people who were well versed in Medrash and Halach and Agada and Mishnah and Talmud, and they would weave it all together in the Piyut. And if you look at the Piyutim, the earliest Piyutim, it's all based on Midrashim and Halachas and the time of the year, just to give voice to what they wanted to learn that Shabbos, or that Yontif, or something had to do with the Yontif, or the time of the year, or that Shabbos, or the Parsha, that Krivus. Krivus, what you said during Shacharis, which was added on Krivus, which had to do with the time period of the week or the year that they were in. And that's how they made up for perhaps the learning that they could not do publicly. They would weave it in, Beruach HaKadosh, into all these piyutim, this paitanim, all these piyutim, this extra stuff in the davening. If you look at a piyut, some of these piyutim, you can become a lamdan from this piyutim. Oh, he means this medrash, and he refers to this gemara over here, right? Whether in the piyutim that survived, and by the way, many of these piyutim did not survive, because it wasn't meant to be as a changing type of davening. We're not changing the davening. But this was okay. The Byzantines don't let us learn, and they don't let us, learn halacha and medrash during in shul. But this is our only opportunity. So instead, we're going to sing and we're going to weave all these Russian people. And oh, he meant this, and he meant this. It was like somewhat like a drasha in a song form, a drasha on the parsha in a song form. That's where the development of the piyutim came about. Now, in the beginning, you'll see the development. The earliest of the paitanim was somebody by the name of Yosi ben Yosi HaKoyen. And his piyutim are very basic. For example, what we say every time we say something, a piyut, during Shacharis, so we always start off, what's the first thing we say? That is from Yosi ben Yosi HaKoyen. Probably from the year 500, maybe 550, basic piyut, not prose, not complicated, but basic piyutim are from the early Kadmonim. And then the next Python was somebody by the name of Yanai, another very famous Python, and he was already he made it in like different prose, in fours, stanzas, different things. For example, we don't know where this comes from, but for example, on a weekday davening, so we have, Kel Baruch Gedol Deo, Hechinu Fal Zoharei Chama. So it talks about and that's probably from Anshei Knesset Gedol, it's part of Birchas Kriyashma, it talks about the sun and the moon. Kushbochu Kel Gedol Deo, Kushbochu, the great mind, Hechinu Fal Zoharei Chama. He prepared the illuminations, the sun, the moon. That's a very basic text. But then on Shabbos, we say the same thing on a much more piyut type of way. Kel Adon al kol ha-matzim, Baruch and Baruch and Fikon l'shama, God le'betuvim melolam, Das zvuna sevi moisai. That's just the first introduction. Again, Aleph, Beis, Gimel, Dalet. Toivim mo'ire shabara lekenu, Yitzorim b'das, bevinu v'askel, Koyach u'gvur anasam v'hem, Liyosh moishim kev devil. It's still talking about the same sun and the moon. But while in the week we try and do it in a short, terse way, on Shabbos when we come together and we celebrate HaKadosh Baruch Hu's creation of the world, so it takes a much more prose, much more meaningful type of way, and that's what that piyut, Kel Odin, was probably not the Sakein by Anshei Knesset Gedolah. It's not really part of the Birchos Kriyas Shema. It's a piyut that's added on, right? Added on Shabbos. Kel Odin al Kol Ha-Matzim. It's the same thing that we say during the week, but on Shabbos we say it in a piyut form. And again, it's all weaved with all types of midrashim, all aleph based, right? Aleph based in stanzas of four and prose of four. That's with how the piyutim developed. That's already the next part of the piyut. For example, what we have by half the slichas that we say, all this piyutim, they say by slichas, right? Leinenu, Ashkuram, Aleinu, Mimushach, Meirat, Meoleinu, Avadim, Mashlubadim, Perek, and Miyadam. Again, aleph based, lamed, mem, nun, samach, ayin, pei. But all these things that we just go by quickly, these are all from the original paitanim. These are very old. It's not made up. It's not somebody 300 years ago decided, okay, I like this verse. These are from the Paitanim. They talk about the hardships that they undergo. Leinenu ashkam aleinu, memushach moirad aleinu. We are suffering hard. And we put it in during Slichas. Did they say during Slichas? Perhaps. They said it probably during that time period of the year. Right? When it was Slichas, or during the Tainus. And when we commemorate the destruction of Beis Hamikdash. But that was their feelings. Most of it did not survive. The some that did survive is part of our davening. Again, it's not part of the Anshei Knesset Gedolah. It's added things. For example, when we say Haggadah, right? So the actual Haggadah, that's from the Tanoim. What about the stuff that we have at the end? The Piyutim that we have at the end, right? Oz, Vayiv, Nisim, Teisa, Balayla, right? The whole thing that we have, Layla, Layla, Vayiv, Chatzia, Layla. That's also from the earliest Python, from the 500s, from Yesi ben Yesi HaKoyim. We know that came from him. Others, we don't know where it's from. But these, again, these are expressions of the Midrashim of, by the way, if you look at that one, Oz Rav Nisim Mifdeisa Balayla, it talks about all the miracles that occurred at the night. And it mixes in Tanakh and Medrash and Halacha and Agad and Gemara and puts it all together. Even if by kinnis, by the way, you ever see those kinnis that we say in Tisha B'Av, right? Many of these Piyutim are from the earliest Paitanim, not the ones from the Holocaust or that, clearly not, but the ones from the Crusades, from the earliest Paitanim. And it refers to all types of Midrashim and Gemaras. This was written by Ruach HaKodesh to express their feelings. That is what a piyut is all about. They had different types of piyut. They had kroivis, which were done during Shachris. They had yetris. They had tziluk, which was done before Kedusha. They had musafim. Different things. Some of it survived, right? Most of it did not survive. But the ones that did survive, we're saying it. And the Rishonim looked very favorable on these piyutim and on these paitanim, because they were written b'ruach hakodesh. They were predated the Rishonim. They came from the 500s, 600s, 700s. Then the time to go in him, primarily from Eretz Yisrael. This was their way of their learning Torah was done through the piyutim, and therefore it survived and it took a very, very important role. Rishonim write about the piyutim. They knew this piyutim inside out. Just because we live today in America and nobody wants to say any piyutim, doesn't mean this comes from even before Ashkenaz.
So, what gave them the Ruach HaKodesh? Are they Kabbalistim? Who says that they have Ruach HaKodesh?
So, it's accepted that it was written by dead Shainim, who only lived a few hundred years after them. They're the ones who said that this was written by the earlier ones, Goinim in Bavel, and we had the Paitanim in Eretz Yisrael. The Gaonim in Babel clearly had Ruach HaKodesh, just one generation, two generations removed from the Amoraim.
And the Byzantines, what's the Nach Gemeinah from them to say you're learning, Torah, you're davening?
I suppose that the shul still survived.
If they're saying something in Hebrew, whether it's...
Yeah, because it seems to be based on the research I did that the Justinian decrees were very specific.
Who would monitor it?
Justinian.
He did.
Torah cannot be read and only it can be translated into Greek. Nothing else.
No, just pragmatic.
So it was very. But the Gemara says they had spies coming. Gemara says why couldn't even in the time of the Gemara? Why couldn't they blow Kiyas Shofar doing Shachris, wanted doing Musaf, because Xeri they'd come and they'd check up. So they had that. They were checking up on them. Now, did they let them take out a Torah? I don't know. I presume yes. But in those times, they also had a Meturgamin, and they perhaps had Shiurim, and Halakha, all that was cancelled. They allowed them to go through the, communist Russia, right? Same thing, communist Russia. You can have the official synagogue, and that's it. Can have classes, right? What did the Russian communists know? Right, same thing.
The earliest thing he wrote down is he was pulled inside for
teaching Torah. Exactly. But in the Russian time, communist time, they had shuls. The big shul in Moscow was always operational for davening, not for learning Torah. Uh-huh. Didn't have classes, right? Clearly. So we find such a thing. History, we know, it does repeat itself, and we see that again. But that's where the development.
They never could figure this out.
I didn't quite know. Maybe it was part of the davening. The chazan gets up there. It wasn't a class where everybody sits around and it was a give and take as a class. Yeah, exactly. There was everybody sitting around and listening to the chazan davening. But those that knew, and they all knew, oh, this is what he's referring to. And probably they came home and they discussed it. And that was a form of expression to make up for the decrees. Now, remember, This was during the Justinian decree. After the Muslims took over, it was clearly an easement on the suffering of the Jewish people. The Muslims came and they said, you know, this is just conquered land. They had no interest whatsoever in the land of Israel. Proof of the fact is that for a full 100 years after the Muslim conquest, they only started building, by the way, the Dome of the Rock was only built 50 years after they conquered Yerushalayim. As soon as they conquered Yerushalayim in the year 640, so Omar said, 70 families can move into Jerusalem. This, you know, this ban of Jews until the time of during the time from the Churban Abayis, basically from Beitar until after even from the Churban, I think, until after the Muslim conquest, Jews were forbidden to live in the city of Yerushalayim. It was called Aleia Capitolina. Jews were not permitted to live there, and it was completely a Christian city. No Jews. The time of Omar, the first caliph, conquered Yerushalayim. So immediately the Jews were allowed to move in. 70 families. It was like a more symbolic token that we let everybody, you all conquered. And like we said last time, they were happy as long as you're not Muslim, we can charge you extra tax, the head tax, and therefore they had no interest in converting anybody. They really had no interest in Yerushalayim. 50 years, the Dome of the Rock was built, started to get built in the year 691. The Al-Aqsa Mosque, right, the other one, was only started to be built in the year 710. 100 years after the conquest, the Muslim conquest, they made an official regional capital, the city of Ramleh. That was a new Arab capital, not Jerusalem. Al-Quds, yeah, they gave a new name. Only 100 years later, they gave a new name of Al-Quds. Till then, it was called Aleia, like the Roman name.
Only because they had a fight.
So it was not really on the radar screen, and because it was not on the radar screen, it was much better for the Jewish life. And the Jewish life, you know, maybe the yeshivas didn't come back to full glory, clearly not. There was no mesifta like we have in Bavel, but the paitanim became more developed. And there were more, you know, then we find the big paitan, which is really the one that we know most, is the famous paitan, Rabbi Eliezer HaKalir. And Rabbi Eliezer HaKalir, according to most understandings, probably lived in that time period. Some say he was a Talmud of Yanai, but he probably lived between the 6th and the 8th century, probably in the year 600s or 700s, probably right after the Arab conquest. And he really took it to a new level, both in its prose and in its, you know, in how it's built, and with all the knowledge that was put into it, with all the midrashim and halachas, and everything mixed into the piyut. And most of the piyutim that we have today, many of them at least, hundreds remained from Rabbi Eliezer HaKalir. And we put it into many, many aspects of our davening. We never realize how much we Tfilas Tal, Rabbi Eliezer HaKalir. Tfilas Geshem, Rabbi Eliezer HaKalir. There's so much Rabbi Eliezer HaKalir. Half of Kinnis is Rabbi Eliezer HaKalir. Most of Slichas that we say on a regular basis is Rabbi Eliezer HaKalir. There's tremendous amount of Rabbi Eliezer HaKalir, and he was so valued by the Rishonim. What they talk about him, it's, you know, they really made the Ramban, for example, writes in number one on the sheet, Ukva Heshiv Ramban Zal B'Sefer Melchamas Hashem Al Divrei Baal Amor B'Tuv Tam V'Das Amar Kosev Gam Be'Einai Yifla Aval Apesed Avodas Abavli Hashem Rosin Kosev Boy Pais. There's a whole question whether on Yom Kippur they would draw lots to do the Avodas, or was it just the Kohen Gadol? All the stuff that did not have to be done by the Kohen Gadol, was it done by the Kohen Gadol, or did they draw lots? So he says that in the Gemara seems to say that there were Pisces. V'chein v'divrei ha-paitan ha-rishon, Rebbe Eliezer b'Rebbe Kalil, u'v'kroyves ha-goyinim chachmen shivit rabban ishvald, zecher kudem l'vrocha. So the Ramban calls him the paitan ha-rishon. He wasn't really the paitan ha-rishon, well, debatable. Depends when he lived.
Rishon means the first, and Rishon means the most important.
Maybe it means the most important. You're right. Good point. Yeah, like now, the thing is like this. He was so on top of everybody else, and he's so, you know, the Ruach HaKodesh and the Midrashim and everything, the Halachas and the Tanakh and the Gemaras and the Mishnah, everything that went into his piyut, he was almost hiding behind his piyut. There is so much doubt who he was and when he lived. And there is no clear consensus, even amongst the Rishonim, who Rabbi Eliezer HaKalir was. Who was he? The one, the father of all the piyutim, right? Everything developed afterwards from his piyutim. You had some from Yosef, like I showed you. Yosef ben Yosef HaKoyen, We have some from Yanai, who was also a big python. But the bulk of the Piyutim and everything developed after that was Rebbe Elazar Kalir. And who is this Rebbe Elazar Kalir? It's shrouded in mystery. I can show you no less than 4 or 5 different shittas who Rebbe Elazar Kalir is. Who is Rebbe Elazar Kalir? What do you know of him? You ever heard of him?
Sure.
Good. Who was he? When did he live?
I thought he lived in Eretz Yisrael.
Which year? When time?
I thought 600.
That's what the scholarly approach is. It's not what the Rishonim say, but I think that's more or less...
He clearly predates the Rishonim.
Clearly predates the Rishonim, because the Rishonim quote him.
Correct.
And now that, they quote him, they know his Piyutim inside out. And he asked me, why is Ruach HaKodesh? Rashi, Ramban, Tosfos, Rush, they wouldn't quote his Piyutim word for word if it didn't have meaning. If it wasn't something that they felt is almost equal to Tefillah from Anshei Knesset HaGdolah. It's not, but it's almost equal to that. Clearly they valued it with Ruach HaKodesh. So who is the Rebbe Elazar Kalir? Shrouded in mystery. Let's go through the different...
And here's one more thing.
And the different hints based on this Piyutim. It's fascinating. You want to see how we developed who he was.
Unique to Eretz Yisrael, yet, but the core of
At this point. There'll be other ones from all over.
Correct. It started over there. And in the beginning, it wasn't so simple. Some were against it. I think we saw that Rav Yudoy Goin was against adding this Piyutim in the middle of davening. Right? There was machlekes back then if they should add it. Imagine just like today there is even a discussion. But it's really machlekes to show them if you can add in davening. We'll get to that.
A certain nusach, essentially, only for Israel. How does it get...
It developed in Israel because of everything that they went through and they underwent, so they developed in Israel. But it wasn't exclusive to that. At the end, it took hold. Vaharaya took hold. The Rishonim, they caught on. The Rishonim put it in their davening. You know, I don't know about you, I grew up in Amsterdam. Yekis, real Ashkenazim. Almost every given Shabbos, there was some type of, the Ashkenazim, the real Ashkenaz, Yekis, there was some type of piyut that you would say. Whether it was a Shabbos of Rosh Chodesh, or Shabbos Mevarchim, or Shabbos 7 weeks between Pesach and Shavuos, or the Arba Pashas, or Shabbos Chanukah, or Shabbos, anytime there was anything to the Shabbos, there was a piyut, a special piyut. And these piyutim were old makaris, old sources. Now, not all of it was from Rebbe Elazar Kalir. Some of you don't even know where it comes from.
So but that was... into the 14th and 1500s, even earlier.
What?
The Ashkenazim came in
the 1100s. Rashi, 1000, 1100, right after Babel.
Uh-huh.
And look how they valued the piyutim, and what they wrote about these piyutim. So clearly it's not something which is, you ever thought about it? When did it develop? Gemara, we don't find any word of any Piyutim.
Mm-hmm.
So clearly it's not from the time of the Gemara. So, but the Rishonim have it already. So it must have been in this time period it developed somewhere.
Yes.
It started in Eretz Yisrael, and we'll soon see. It wasn't just the only thing that Eretz Yisrael, contributed. Even during this time period, it was really the dark ages of Eretz Yisrael. Right? So soon we can learn the next thing we're going to talk about is the Ben Usher. The codex and the painstaking the Seferim who lived in Israel, so they have a lot to contribute even without being in the bulk of the Talmud and the Tshuvas and everything else like that. There's a lot to contribute that they did contribute. Let's talk about Rebbe Elazar Kalir. Fascinating. So just to show you Tshuva Me'ava, which is an early Achron, and he writes and he just talks about who he was. Kimishi Yesh Lo Einayim Lirois. Anybody, Alan, this is for the cynics out there. Anybody that had eyes to see, was naim lishmoya, and ears to listen, enof tireno, your eyes will see, uvilvava yovin, and in your heart you'll understand, shekol divrei hakalir, that all the words of the kalir, meleim ziv hachochma, full of wisdom, umifikim noiga hatvuna, we talk in this language, and they bring forth the glow of wisdom, uvruach piv, and in the spirit of his mouth, agodois, umidrashois, stumois, umufurashois, hakol yofe, osa beitoi, eis ledabe, eis lechalachshois, what he spoke about, what he kept quiet about, umashe kol dvorov meleim agodois, vchut chin chidois, and all his words are full of hints and ramozim, hein hein gvuroisov, hein hein neroisov, that's his greatness. How sweet are the words of the Bali Agada, the Midrashim, this Atev Ba'urim Agadol, and he brings them all together in this great light, Kesalma, like a blanket, Vasa Melitzes, Meshubotzes, Zohav, Soviv, and he makes all types of references filled with gold, Vihivig, Mizoyim, Vadorom, Shukulam, Kadoim, Neshtamish, Ba'urim Agadol. They should be all used in this great light of our tefillah. Look what the tour writes. The tour is pretty early. Shenoigin b'cholam makaymes in all the places the minig was loyma krayvitz to say krayvitz during Das Shacharis. Do you say krayvitz, Alan? Do you say krayvitz? I don't either. The minig in Klaus also say that. They say so quickly. Right? Zehaya bismanoi. The time you're shining bismanoi zeh einoigim came. Right? Vegamba, and then he writes. And then the tour writes. The Gamma Rishonim, and even the Rishonim, who is he talking about? Not himself, because he's talking about the Rishonim before him, earlier than him. Asher tiknu hoye gedoy l'olam, k'moy Rav Eleza HaKalir v'chaveirov, at kan l'shonai. Now, so this is Rav Eleza HaKalir, the foremost of the Pythonim. When did he live? Where did he live? And when did he live? So this is clear. He writes in his own piyutim, so you always look at the first letter to try and see what his name is. So many times he writes Eliezer, B'Rabbi Kalir, Rav Eliezer HaKalir, Mikiryat Sefer. That's what he writes. The problem is, we don't know of a city called Kiryat Sefer after the Churban. What is he talking about? So some say he means, there's discussion amongst it, some means Kiryat Sefer, the agglomeration, the area of Svarim. He talks about his predecessors, his parents and his grandparents and his ancestors, they were all one big community of Svarim, and that's what he refers to, Kiryat Sefer. Others say there was a place like that. Nobody really knows. That's part of the mystery. Rabbi Eliezer HaKalir from Kiryat Sefer. We don't have a place called Kiryat Sefer back then after the Churban. Yeah, before the Churban, I think there was. But after the Churban, Kiryat Sefer doesn't exist.
Well, it's not the current one. That's why
not the current one. But where is he? Where is this Kiryat Sefer? Not really know. Part of the mystery. But look at the Tosfos. Look at Tosfos. He just didn't know. What?
Yeah. They were
not always, by the way. They had people living in the bottom of the Jordan River in Eilat. They had people living. They had people living in Ashkelon, in Aza. So why couldn't they live in the area of Yehuda? Yeah, Jews of Yerushalayim. Where they come from? From the Galil, they transported them. No, they probably lived in all types of villages. And the time of we're talking about the Muslim, yeah.
After the
Kalir probably lived after them, right after the Muslim conquest. So where they come from, Yerushalayim? They brought them from the Galil. No, they probably lived in neighboring Bedouin, whatever it is, and the Aray Yehuda, whatever they lived. I mean, they were cultural. And you go, by the way, you go to Israel, every hilltop can have another hold.
I know, but what we find today is not found there. We find it all up north.
I mean,
the general rule in this
all the shuls. Wait, they found the shul in the south of the Jordan River, below Beit Shan. That's not north. But you're right. Both are,
north.
You're right. Both is north. Yeah. Most of the shuls they actually brought down have the main wall with the opening facing south, facing Yerushalayim, facing
it's
south.
The Davin Tveri.
Correct. Right. That's how the Davin Tveri. Correct. Facing south. So that is true. We find a lot of shuls over there, but we know there were Jewish communities in other places as well. We know that they turned to the Arab conquerors on the bottom by Eilat and wanted to make some type of treaty with them. So you know they had Jews over there. You know, we didn't quite find the shuls yet. It's not that they're not there. But anyway, who is the Rebbe Eliezer HaKalir? So we'll start this week. Rebbe Eliezer HaKalir will start the mystery. One shita is Tosfos. No less than Tosfos. Rashi's grandson, the 1100, says that you know who Rebbe Eliezer HaKalir is? Rebbe Eliezer be Rebbe Shimon ben Yochai. Tana! No less. Why not? And he brings the proof.
The problem is nobody quoted it. Wasn't somebody quoted to him?
He thinks Rebbe Eliezer HaKalir is Rebbe Eliezer B'Reb Shimon Bar Yochai.
Rebbe Eliezer Shimon is all over the Gemara.
Correct. And he also had a night job where he was the Paitan. That's what Tosfos is right. I didn't make it up. Look at number three. The Gemara says like this. Tanya. Rebbe Yechel Menzaka says, Machu Veshivosa Baskal Oysirosha, one of the Rishoyim, maybe Nebuchadnezzar, said, B'shar Sha'oma, he said, Ela Bob Si'ov Adam Le'Elyoin, I'm going to go and I'm going to fight against God. So Yatzah Baskal V'Amolai, the Gemara Chagiga says, the heavenly voice came out, said, Rasha ben Rasha, ben benoy shal Nimrod Rasha, grandson of Nimrod, Shemrit kalem kulalav machusay, kamash nesav shal Adam. How long does a person live? Shivim shana, shnemi meshazem, shivim shana, shivim shana, shana. Now, you want to come fight against God? V'aloy min ha'oretz ad lo'akia, mahalei chamesh mo'yishana. The distance from the sky, from the earth to the sky, is 500 light years. Now we know what it means, right? 500 years. 500 light years away. Distance of 500 years. V'ovio sherakia, and the thickness of the heavens, is mahalei chamesh mo'yishana, is another 500 years. V'chein be'kol rakia v'rakia, between every heaven is another 500 years. And l'mal man chayos HaKadosh. And on top of that, till you even get to Kodesh Baruch Hu, are the chayos HaKadosh. Regle HaChayos connected kulam. And the legs of these heavenly angels is the distance of all of it. Which is how much? 7, 8, 15 times 500 years. Talking about thousands of years. You can never get there. You want to go fight against God. That's a nice, you know, not understandable, but a Gemara. Says Taisvis, V'rag lechayis k'neged kulam. Taisvis, wait a second. Yesh maghigin, some make a girsa, b'kdushosa, sheyosad hakalir. Wait a second. We have a piyut from the kalir, Rabbi Loza kalir, v'achayis, that's what the piyut is, asheheino merubois, like he say, that are surrounding the throne, kaf regel, the leg, is chamesh meois, v'chamesh esrei. 515. That's what he writes. In other words, the leg of the chayos of the heavenly angels is 515. Says Taisus, what do you mean? It doesn't fit with our Gemara. Because our Gemara says that is connected kulam. So what they do is, umoychekim havov. Then they erase the vav. They don't say 515, which means 515 years, but it means 500 or 15 500s. So, vaimrim. Then it fits with the Gemara. Because there are seven heavens and eight spaces between the seven heavens. That's 15 steps you gotta go. That's 15 times 500. V'hainu minyan yeshara. And that's what it says. Ragleim, ragleim, regel yeshara. That the legs of the chayos is straight. Gematria of yeshara. It's 500 times 15, or 515. Lishimana, Shekein Oila, Tezvav Pamin. So Taisus is bothered, Alan here. Taisus knew every Kalir, every piyut from the Kalir. And he says, wait a second. The Kalir writes that the legs of the angels is 515. According to the Gemara, it's not like that's 500 times 15. It doesn't make sense. Then he says, look what he says. Umiyo Bechinam, Taisus says, Mokkua. You don't have to change the gears in the Kalir and the Piyut. Why? Shes Yasa Dvorov al Pi Yushalmi. Because the Kalir lived in Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, he followed the Yushalmi. The Yushalmi in Bracha says, Am Rav Levi, Rav Levi says, Meretz Vrad Lokia, Mahalach Tav Kuf Shana. It's 500 years. Am Rav Rechid, Rav Chalboi, whatever. Bos Muka Gadol Mizeh, Regel Echot Keminyin Yeshara. In other words, not true, it's 515, the Gematria of 5 of Yeshara, which is 515. Mashme, Keminyin Yeshayosat, Tavkuf, Tezvav. In other words, it says, don't change the Girsa in the Piyut, the Kalir followed the Yushalmi, that there it says, 515, you don't have to say like the Bavli 500 times 15, but rather 515, like the Gematria of Regel Yeshara 515. Then he reads right over here. V'chein ha'yadakoy. And that was the minik of the Kalir. Shebebekama mekoymois. In some places, ha'yamin meniach shita sashah shalonu. He would ignore the Bavli. K'dei lech shita sashah shalmi. Why, says Taisus? Shu ha'yatana. Because the Kalir was a Tana. V'hoya Rebbe Lezer b'Rebbe Shemoin. And the Kalir was none other than Rebbe Lezer, the son of Rebbe Shemoin Yechai. Why do I know that? Because the Medrash says, the Korioleo, because the Medrash speaks about Reb Shimon, Reb Lezer, Reb Shimon, he calls him Mikol Afkas Roichel. From all the spices that he sells, that, you know, all the spices that a peddler sells, that's Reb Lezer, Reb Shimon. Tana, Koro, that Reb Lezer, Reb Shimon, Tana, he learned, Kore, he read, Kroivets Upaitan. He was Mechaber the Kroivets Upaitan. Right? Right? So therefore he says, the Medrash says in Vayikra Rabbah, that Rebbe Lezver Rebbe Shimon is better than all the spices, and he is a Kroivets Upaitan, that's what the Medrash says, so clearly Rebbe Lezver Akalir is Rebbe Lezver Rebbe Shimon. Is that a real proof? I don't know, funny proof, but that's what Taisa says. And then he has another proof. He says, listen to this proof. He says, well, if you look at all the Kalir's Piyutim and Alan, they knew the Piyutim inside out. He says, none of the Piyutim were written for a second day Yontif. That's what he says. None of them written for a second day Yontif. So he must have been living in a time when he didn't have second day Yontif. So he must have been Esther Saldiker when there was still Mekadosh HaPiyariyah. Uve Yom of Mekadosh HaPiyariyah. And in the time of Kalir, they would bake based on the Riyah. Shema'ilam layasat rakhoivet miyamechot. You look at all his piyutim, and they knew his piyutim inside out because they learned it and they studied it and they sang it. You never found a piyut for a second day Yontif. He must have been a Tana in the Gemara's time, in the maybe early. Some say maybe it was an Amora, maybe, but not later than Abaye v'Rava, when they would be Mekadosh HaPiyariyah in Eretz Yisrael. That's Rebbe Lezer v'Rebbe Kalir, none other than Rebbe Lezer v'Rebbe Shimon, Rebbe Lezer, the son of Rebbe Shimon v'Yachai. And that's why the Medrash says, Mikol Afkaz Reichel, he was a paitan. Rebbe Lezer v'Rebbe Shimon, better than all the spices in the world, he is Rebbe Lezer Kalir. Many problems with that. First and foremost, we're going to discuss all these problems next week. First and foremost, first of all, Kabbalist, that makes sense. Knows everything, makes sense. Fits right in Ruach HaKodesh, for sure. Fits right in there. The problem is that one of the things that we know Rabbi Lezer Bakalir says in his piyut, is he writes over there, in the kinnas, we've seen in one of the things, he writes, and we're sitting on this Churban already more than 900 years.
Oh, no.
That's a problem, 900 years. Couldn't be Rabbi Lezer Shimon. So no, they threw that in afterwards. That's how he chickens it. Exactly. Yeah, and then Tom Rishon said, oh yeah, let's throw in more than 900 years. Oh, that's the next question. What does Kalir mean? What does Kalir mean? What does it mean? So that's a whole next question. Because the next week we'll discuss that. Some say he missed his father's name. Some say that he ate some, there's some, I don't know where he came from. He ate some magic potion. Kalir means a cake. And he digested a magic potion and in the cake, and that gave his mouth the ability to make up and to sing and to be the paitan. And that's why he didn't want to attribute it to his own greatness. He said, no, it's all the kalir. Kalir means cake. It's all the kalir. That's why I am what I am. That's all these weirdest things. Again, this is a person, one of the few people, that is completely shrouded in mystery. He ranges, his age ranges from Rebbe Lezer v'Rebbe Shimon, the earliest, a Tana in the year, what is Rebbe Lezer v'Rebbe Shimon in the year 150, right? Rebbe Lezer v'Rebbe Shimon, Shimon Baichai was in that time period, right?
Rebbe
Kiva. Time of Rebbe, no, Rebbe Shimon Baichai, time of Rebbe. No, not Rebbe.
Yeah, Rebbe Shimon's, Rebbe Kiva's Talmud. One generation down.
Right. Rebbe Shimon's Rebbe Kiva's Talmud, correct? So the year 150, let's say. 160, 170. We range from then all the way till 900 years after the Churban. After Rav Haigoin, someplace in that time period. Rishon clearly had him. But anywhere in a 1,000-year period.
That's on the late side, though.
Yeah, that's the late side. Yeah, but then the scholars say that we probably lived in Talmud of Yanai in the year 650, 700, not later than that. That was when he lived. But you think about it. A person that we have so much from him, and we have no idea where he lived. 1,000-year time period he could have lived. We don't have that in anybody. Everybody we have material from, we know exactly when they lived, we know exactly where they lived. Everybody, our whole claim that we have in our history is we know exactly where everybody lived, who his father was, what he lived, what it surrounded him,
yeah,
and him,
the
nothing.
Was for all the Tanaim and many of Moraim in Eretz Yisrael, so many, a person as big as what he accomplished, how does he not have
shrouded in mystery. That's so funny.
The prophet is the Gaonim who wrote everybody down. We have all those lists from the Gaonim and nothing.
Nothing. Nobody mentions the Kalir. No, the Gaonim did not mention the Kalir. Again, if he lived in the year 700 or 700 in Eretz Yisrael, it would make sense. Who's going to quote him? Who's going to bring him down?
For sure, gone.
What?
We have enough. Shiragon?
Yeah, and also something else that the Kalir, you know, he was hiding behind his prose. He made these piyutim, and people took it upon themselves. He didn't write a sefer and said, okay, I'm writing tshuvas, like the Gaonim wrote.
I know, but once it's able to
trace it back to him through his name.
Right, or to get it out to Klal Yisrael. Once they're at this point, everything that gets done is going throughout the world now. And if we have something that everybody agrees on, and everybody holds from, that makes it a lot more...
So, Alan, so you're saying that the ones that say that he lived in the year 950 makes the most sense?
I know, it's very hard that way, though.
But you're saying, we'll quote him, and that's to quote him. They know him inside out. I mean, you'll soon see the Eben Ezra, who we next week we'll do it. He rips apart the Piyutim and he rips apart the Kalir.
When did Eben Ezra
live? Eben Ezra lived what? In the year 1100, 1200? Well, early. And he rips apart and he quotes, flows from all over the Kalir. This Piyut, what does he mean over here? And what does he mean over here? And he rips him apart. But he goes with the inside out. So to say that he was lived mere 100 years earlier, hard to say also. It looks like it was more established, it was more accepted. And that's why the year 700 probably makes the most sense. But anyway, I don't want to leave you first with Tesis and the Rush, and some Rishonim hold that he was Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon. Others say, well, we got another Rabbi Elazar, maybe it's Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Arach. Rabbi Elazar ben Arach, also Tana. Others say he was in the time of Bai Merova. We're going to get to all the different Shitas, and we're going to also focus on why his name is Kalir, and where he lived, and what his name was like that, and then...
What was his motivation, son of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, to write...
What do you mean, midrashim? And what did midrashim written?
Yeah, but in the format of a paitan.
Paitan, yeah. That's with my whole history that I gave about Eretz Yisrael and about expressing yourself. Then it would fit into that time period. If you say you lived in the time of Tanoim, like you said, why can't you write a midrash?
Right.
Write down the midrashim. No. Take all the midrashim and put them together in a paitan.
And that means a lot of this. It would go with his character, though.
No.
There's
a
whole bunch of stories on
him. Correct. He was in the medrashes. He was a Tana, a Kora, a Kreivitz, and a Paitan. So he wrote all these things. So, boom, Paitan, what do you want? It's written on him.
What would his dad say? You know, the whole purpose of writing his Paitan was essentially because of the Tanian rule.
That's what I told you in the beginning. If you don't go with that, he was the blood of Shimon, I wouldn't do that.
There's no reason to write.
And also, and there's another reason I have a hard time with understanding the blood of Shimon, because then what happened for 400 years? It just died out?
Or
it all got lost?
But then goes my question is, how can nobody quote the
and nobody quotes any of these things? None of you
should. Not quote that.
The Gemara should quote it.
How much we say everybody? It says that Rav Shimon bar Yochai wrote
the Zohar.
It's also
debatable. We'll discuss it.
Who quotes the Zohar in early Rishon?
We'll discuss it. If Yaakov Emden held it was probably yes written by Rav Shimon bar Yochai, but a lot of mistakes. It's not so clear.
So Rashi doesn't quote him. Rambam doesn't quote him. None of the big ones quote him.
Ramban I think quotes.
Very very complicated on that.
Yeah, it is complicated.
I didn't say that. I don't say that.